DC parishes became fully integrated and community conscious, there would still be a need for at least two additional parishes. The opportunities are that great. And also, there is a wave of search for knowledge, truth, and meaning to life, for which the church does have an answer. Some of my most exhilarating experiences have been with magna cum laude students of Howard University. The statistic for percentage of Negro enrollments in college compared to percentage of growth for whites is simply staggering. I think it appropriate for me to read here a letter from Dr. Joyce, dated March 17th, brand new year, to the congregations and pastors in black ministry. Dear brethren, the theme of the St. Louis convention was God opens doors, studying the blessings of God upon the efforts in black ministry, especially in recent years. It is abundantly clear that God is opening the door to black ministry for our synod wider and wider each year. This harvest has always been plenteous, but the laborers were few. Although the supply of laborers does not equal the demand, we must thank God that he has reversed the trend towards fewer and fewer workers. About 3 years ago, our supply of active black parish pastors declined to the critically dangerous low of 37. Today, despite retirement and death, there are 46 black parish pastors at work in the synod, and the future has never been brighter. There are 15 black men in the seminaries, and many others committed to enter and train there. God is opening ever wider the door to black ministry for our synod. God is supplying the laborers to do his work. It is now time for us to get on with the task of missions. The primary purpose for which God opens doors is for his disciples, through proclamation of the gospel, to bring persons to a living relationship with Christ and into the fellowship of believers. The Black Ministry Commission of the Synod is sponsoring an evangelism thrust in black ministry with a challenging title, Bringing Them In. I hope that your congregation can work this program into its crowded schedule. This thrust is planned for the month of June. Traditionally, that is the last month of the hectic schedule. The vacation months of July and August usually bring slack activity for our churches. What better way could we close the active season than by an evangelism experience concentrating upon the primary purpose for which the church was established? God opens doors. It is fitting and proper that we should go forth on his command, trusting in his promises, and empowered by his Spirit to bring in the harvest of blood-bought souls. I recommend this program very highly and pray God's richest blessings upon you. And signed by Dr. Frost. Be sure and discount that from my time. That's not all my time. All right. That leads us to the question, do Negroes go for our liturgical style of service and our insistence on doctrinal knowledge? Don't forget one important truth about the whole matter of Negro aspirations. In order to even be considered an equal to whites, he's got to be nearly twice as good. That's true in every field. The woman must spend more than double on her hairdo in order to be noticed. And she must wear the finest and most expensive clothes to be acceptable. The man must work two jobs, go to school, and be on call for all kinds of functions just to be accepted on a par with whites. And religion is not one of the least of his assets. He wants to know more, serve more, and be involved in the best. If the Negro likes what we have to offer, if we but give him the opportunity to discover us and to find out who these Lutherans are. When in the beginning days of our mission, in the wing of the YWCA in Washington, D.C., someone asked a little child, why do you go to that there little white church with that little church with a white pastor? Her answer was, without hesitation, they teach. Doctrine and liturgy are not an albatross. They are rather peacock feathers. who seeks, but when seeking some place to go with a date, or even a husband and wife for a night out, a Bach concert is the place to go. Any Christmas concert at Howard University, it was not the very fine renditions of Negro spirituals that got the ovations, but it was the fervent presentation of Handel's Messiah that brought the audience to its feet with the loudest possible applause. One of our members, now dead, very race conscious and critical of whites, nevertheless said, "I wouldn't take anything for the benefits and lasting blessings I got from our Christmas," German type, "Christmas programs we had in our mission church in Meheran, Virginia. I once was on a Lutheran church tour in Chicago where I simply could not keep my mouth shut when a complex-ridden white pastor loudly lamented the big investment in one of the oldest churches in the downtown area with words like, "What good are all these beautiful stained glass windows? Who cares about this million-dollar, my figure, organ? What does this vaulted nave and Gothic architecture mean to these ghetto kids?" He had listened to too many worldly-wise social workers and either never knew or had completely forgotten that human nature is the same everywhere and in all people. All aspire, and aspirations must be nurtured. When we moved into our not-so-pretentious 90-year-old structure, incidentally on the historical register, I'll never forget children coming in, stopping, staring, gazing up. They said this in their own inimical way. And that kind of experience did more for the lifting up of the aspirations of those children than any playground, gymnasium, or bus tour could do. And the same is true of dignified liturgy and reverent singing. It may not attract all, but it is sought by many and treasured by all who have found it. It's too good to be scuttled. It's normal to resist change. It's not a sign of inappropriateness. We're not really rendering a service if we simply follow the lines of least resistance, giving them what we whites think they, the blacks, want. Just another word about doctrine. First of all, the Negro loves the Bible. I believe the Negro is more of a person of prayer than whites. Yesterday we heard it when the charismatics. We've got colored charismatics too. They're more humble before God. I get letter after letter in which they're not afraid to express themselves about their thankfulness to God. But it is true that the trend today is more toward the implications of the gospel, love and service and activities exemplified by the life of Christ, putting the word into practice. And I like very much what was said yesterday morning, really a new talk to me. The message was there, I'm trying to quote, the message was there all the time. The message was in the mind of God. God had the message for the whole world. But God chose to demonstrate that message by visualizing, making it visual to the people. I like that. And that is exactly what we also find that the people want. So can our white churches provide these needs that are wanted and that are desired? Can our white churches provide these needs and attract as well as hold Negroes as active members? For the most part, the answer is no. Mostly, our people will not attend the white church even in walking distance. countries and go to their own. And still, Mount Olivet has transferred individuals and families to 12 white parishes in our area. And only 3 or 4 of those have come back. But there have been additional dropouts. It depends very much upon the individual, how tough a hide he has to take the offenses or his initial attitude in making the transfer. For example, I'm coming right back home here to St. Louis. I had a fine young lad in St. Philip's Sunday School class back in 1932. I loved him. I love his father and mother. They were our very close friends. I still correspond with his father. But this lad grew up, and he had has a family, and he came to Washington, D.C., to an important position with the State Department, which eventually led him into an ambassadorship. I was so glad to hear about his coming to Washington. I was sure he would come to Pastor Siebel's church, but nothing happened. Eventually, his former pastor, Dr. Susie, and I had a luncheon appointment together. I finally got around to asking him about church attendance. I was proud of him. I wanted to share that pride with him, or him to share what he had with us. I wanted him to come to our church. Well, he saw our church from the outside, never got into the inside. He never entered. He gave as his reason that even though he admitted that we needed him in our growing process, he felt he was needed more in a white parish. He felt that he could, by his presence, contribute more to the building of God's kingdom in a white parish than his presence could contribute in our parish. And I could not disagree with him. But it doesn't always work out that way. It did not noticeably work out that way in his instance. There are a percentage of Negroes who have this same line of reasoning. I am told that some are motivated what they believe holds a promise of upward social mobility. White churches feel themselves very fortunate if these people find them and they can say, we're integrated. They'll elect them as elders and so forth, presidents of young people. But over the years, even this bait doesn't draw a great number. Of course, they don't really want a great number. Just enough to soothe their conscience. Fortunately, there are exceptions to this. But if we expect the future of black ministry to lie in integration, I'm afraid we'll have only a holding operation. But this is what some of you will be facing. You'll get calls into parishes of changing communities, and it will be hard to attract people into a church which for so long did not want them and is now suspected of wanting them only to keep themselves from perishing. In a changing community, the problem is in the pew. The people you still have in your pews, for the most part, create a frigid zone, and people from torrid and tropical climates in their all-black associations find it difficult to become acclimated. Of course, I also have an instance which is not as unusual as it may sound. When I asked a member why she didn't transfer her membership to the congregation only a half a mile from her house, and she was 6 miles from our church, she said, they're just too nice to us. She was uncomfortable in the overdone friendliness of the members. The point is, people want to feel comfortable when they come to worship. However, in spite of foreboding barriers, the integrating church in a changing community is needed and must be encouraged and strengthened, if necessary, by the support of mission boards. Though not a requisite or absolute essential, a biracial team ministry can be very helpful in the area of evangelism or winning souls. But the problem of the pew overcome primarily by the gospel presented not only for the salvation of souls, but also presented with all its implications for this life. And I believe this is an area of ministry often neglected in our older Lutheran churches. When I go home at vacation time to Minnesota, I hear no implications of the gospel on the 3 Sundays that I hear sermons there. Good gospel. Heaven is wonderful. Thank God that we have the pure doctrine. The gospel demonstrated with a life of love and sincere concern, in my opinion, is still the most powerful means we possess. That which can be seen as well as heard is more effective and far-reaching, and these dangerous statements, than assertions and pronouncements that we are the church for all people. So, and we see this on bulletin board. So, the future of black ministry lies not necessarily in changes of worship, styles, and adaptations to what is believed to be black religion or soul, including a Negro spiritual occasionally isn't going to make a great deal of difference. Using so-called gospel songs may alienate as many people as it pleases. Contemporary worship styles do not seem to have as much attraction for black youth as they had for white youth. Innovations may make a loud noise and a visible splash, but usually end up in merely a ripple. So what's left for us to do? New missions must be started with specific objectives, not just incidental encounters. And that brings us back to where we were about 2 decades ago. Back to starting in, quote, Negro missions or colored missions. For close to 2 decades, such a suggestion was taboo. I believe that inadvertently we have completed the entire circle of ways and methods of proclaiming the gospel to Negroes, except that to my knowledge no Lutheran church has a special place for receiving Negroes. So at first we simply collected mission monies and established missions for colored people in the Deep South. Next we established missions for Negroes in the larger cities. And most of the missionaries were white, with instructions that since they were being paid by mission money, their missionary efforts had to be limited to Negroes. Even hospital ministries were discouraged, and speaking from what was told me, what I experienced. But restrictions that worked in the South and obeyed were ignored in northern cities and even in border states. So, our synodical conference salaried missionaries, white, often ministered, blacks, often ministered also to whites. Inevitably, it worked also the other way. Our colored Lutherans began getting ministry from white churches and or their pastors, either in church or frequently in their home. And I know of instances in the sacristy until a colored mission could be started. But then came a period when no specially designated colored missions were started. Next came the rule in our southeastern district that funding would be withheld from any mission that refused to admit Negroes. This was more recently amplified to deliberately begin missions where there was at least the opportunity to bring both Negroes and whites into the church from the very start, preferably by transfers from our black congregations. Now, however, I believe we have returned to the point where we must start missions in areas where it is unlikely that more than a token few whites will be included in the membership. Areas that are nearly totally black residential. Of course, it will never be designated as a Negro mission, but for all practical purposes, that is what it will be. It will attract only Negroes and a few adventurous whites. To accomplish this and to meet the challenge of black ministry to the Lutheran Church, there simply will not be enough Negro pastors available. And this is where you come in. White pastors will be needed if the mission boards of our various districts accept the challenge that Black America presents to them. Of course, the latter in itself is going to take a lot of doing. For this tremendous challenge and this big job confronting the Lutheran Church, all of us are needed. It will take black and white together to overcome the invisible wall of separation, separatism. And what can we expect in the future with more white ministers in black ministry? It can be a very bright future, given the opportunity to learn what needs to be learned about a people that live in a world of their own within the world we know. Yours can be among the happiest and most rewarding of ministries. Nothing is going to happen of itself. Preaching the word faithfully in all its truth and purity just isn't going to do the trick. Luther may have been right in his day when he said, "Da ist kein Ding, dass die Leute so bei der Kirche hält, als eine gute Predigt." There is no one thing which so will keep the people with the church as a good sermon or good preaching. But it just ain't so today. Today it will take work, not on your pants, but on your feet. It will take true letter, or, quoting again, Reverend Edwin Peeple, with your feet on the ground, your finger on the doorbell, and your heart on your Savior. That means dedication, not only to your Savior, but dedication to a purpose and conviction that you have something to give and to share that the Negro really desires and needs. You must be convinced that you are responding to legitimate needs and concerns with cultural sensitivity and relevance to the extent that you have come to an understanding of particular human cultural situations. You will be on trial and tested all your ministry to see if you are real, honest, trustworthy. The time will never come when you can say that you've got it made. Congressman Walter Pomeroy of Washington, D.C. said to me as a sort of warning, the black man, "Bill, we regard you highly and appreciate everything you are doing." This was right after the burning. "But please remember, you are not black. And when this sort of thing happens again, it may be worse. And you'll be treated the same as a white man who has been our enemy." Now, of course, that is what a mob psychology can do. There was a time before that when I felt that my record would be my defense. But that record must be established and reestablished every day with honesty and sincerity and authenticity, and that includes a readiness to admit not only your own shortcomings, weaknesses, and faults, but also those of your sister churches and your synod, and sometimes even Christianity itself. Your every move will be checked and evaluated. I'll be through in a minute. You must become colored, as it were, but you dare not forget that you are white. And now I repeat, in reverse, what I said about Negro men and women earlier. You must be better than the best in order to be accepted as equal. Word gets out that there are hazards, and I know you'll want to hear this, and even dangers in black ministry. Of course there are. But when they come to light, they are usually amplified and exaggerated simply because it's in black ministry. But these are not to hinder your dedication to a work and involvement with a cause. Fear simply is not compatible with gospel. Yes, I've been bodily attacked. My clothes have been torn. My face bruised. My glasses broken. Yes, I've been shot at with powerful BB guns, piercing my felt hat, denting my briefcase. Four more pages. I understand. time to come to his aid. Yes, I routed a noted file killer out of our home. Yes, I did have my entire windshield and bricks on my lap and car seat. Yes, I did have prostitutes enter my car while waiting for a stoplight. Yes, I could go on, but first of all, I must add that none of it was racial. And secondly, I must say, should I therefore stay out of black ministry? Should I therefore stay safely at home? My answer is a quotation from John A. Schett. A ship in harbor is safe, but that is not what ships are made for. I know you do not want to remain safely in these cloistered walls. I know that you want to get out there where the action is, and I urge you to hurry. Don't worry about those additional degrees you would like to have. That worried me a lot at first. I tried to avoid getting into involved conversations with faculty members at Howard U. I avoided the doctors in the hospitals and the nurses to some extent until I found out that they yearned for what I had, that they missed even one day's readings and bottles of prayer if I was late in getting it to them, until I learned that PhDs hungered for the gospel presented in a more dignified format than they were used to getting it, and that they, too, bowed their knees in prayer when their daughters came home late from a date. Oh, yes, there's going to be sniping, like he wasn't good enough for a regular call, so they gave him a call to colored congregation. Or like this classic from a district president to a lay lady interested in furthering Negro mission. The subject under discussion was Walter Heine is called here, Haney was called in the East. I talked to him on the phone this morning. One time he was pastor of St. Philip's Lutheran Church here. Now I'm going to quote from memory of that district president in his letter to this lay lady. Well, you know that when white men are pastors of colored congregations, they develop an inferiority complex, and so we elected him to be secretary of our pastoral conference to bolster his morale. Mind you, Pastor Heine, now retired, was at one time a seminary professor. Mine. During the early 60s, there was a sort of halo of romance about entering ministry in the inner city, a new name which developed during that period. Students were eager for calls into the inner city because that's where the action was. But one after another, those missions were closed. But don't forget, the romance is still there, as it is in every gospel ministry. But you find it in double measure in black ministry. And I've got to find occasion to say it somewhere, so I'll inject it here. I was personally honored on the White House lawn by President Truman. I had personally been received, hat in hand, autographed pictures of President Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, and Ford, and a real large picture of Kissinger with a more worthy autograph. And last but not least, on March 8th, I received a greeting on my 75th birthday from the White House, signed Mrs. and President Carter. Now, I do not know if any of these were motivated by my service to the city through my ministry to Negroes. But I do know that each of them was received as a result of the respect and regard the White House had for my members who worked there, except the one from Truman, which was for services rendered to our military men. So what's the future of black ministry? If it were not for our many blunders and failures, the answer to that would be quite simple. But as Luking pointed out in his book, Mission in the Making, in the chapter on Negro missions, we have made so many mistakes simply because we had a mentality which concluded that prevail against it. And if you wanted to sound more Lutheran, you simply quote Luther and sing. The word they still shall let remain, nor any thanks have for it. He's by our side upon the plain with his good gifts and spirit. And take they our life, goods, fame, child, and wife. Let these all be gone. They yet have nothing won. The kingdom ours remaineth. We couldn't be gathered together here today, and certainly I would not be here speaking to you today if we did not believe that the gospel is absolute, eternal, and unchanging truth which transcends all cultures, and that it is also dynamic truth which can be spoken powerfully and lived realistically into the realities of every culture. And though we often fumble badly in this task, the Spirit of God graciously works through our humble human efforts. And with that assurance, we be convinced that there is room for all of us and each of us, black and white, together. Thank you.
Brad, I intended at the beginning to tell you to be sure to speak right up and be forthright. But I see you figured it out for yourself. We may have a little time for questions. I'd like to announce, first of all, hold on, we got a couple of other things to do. Pastor Schiebel and Vicar Dale Leland, who's sitting over here, will be here in this room at 2:30. 3:30. In case you have some specific questions and you have some time, please feel free to come back. Also, before we see if there's a question or two, we have some very important people meeting on campus today. You should know who they are. When Dr. Robinson appeared in chapel today, Pastor Jumbo and Amabib from Nigeria were sitting behind me, and I said, now we're going to hear some genuine black Lutheran preaching. Pastor Jumbo said to me, I wonder if I'll understand him. I think he did. I'd like to have Dr. August Silva, who has worked with black ministry for a long time now, introduce the members of the commission that are meeting here. Would you please do that?
Very quickly, would the gentlemen who are members of the Bicentennial Committee rise? Dr. Robinson, Pastor Kermit Ratcliffe, serving a biracial congregation in East St. Louis, Dr. Richard Dickinson, the Executive Secretary, and Dr. Peter Hunt, who arrived about 15, 20 minutes ago when he came in from Selma, Alabama. We regret that Dr. Joe Lavallee could not be with us. He had very serious surgery some time ago and had his foot amputated and had hoped that he would be able to make this his first visit back on the campus. But he was not quite well enough to make that trip. Dr. Schultz, that's the group that is in attendance right now.
All right. Thank you very much. Bowman wanted to have a word. Did he leave? Oh, there you are. I'm sorry. I can always get a job at the other seminary. Is it more natural for a black congregation to have a black pastor? More effective in his ministry?
I endeavored to answer that. The answer is it's different in every situation. The chain from black to white and from white to black, and the effectiveness is dependent, as I pointed out, pretty much on the dedication and the shoe leather and doorbell punching and all of that. We cannot depend upon the Word of God alone. The Word of God has got to be made visible. And a black man can do it, and a white man can do it.
Thank you.
he never indicated this by saying that even though Synod has the objective of getting 15 black men every year for 10 years, that's not going to be enough. So it's got to be black and white together. My congregation was started as a black mission with instructions to leave it at that. But we, of course, being located where we are, we have six motels in spitting distance of our church, and so we have visitors constantly. These visitors are welcomed and embraced and in every sense of the word feel comfortable, and the letters which I've quoted that I get, it's the first time they've been in a church with souls. Now, that's part of the question. I didn't quite get the other angle of your question. It seems to me.
Yeah, will you repeat that?
Like I said, I'm pastor of a black congregation, and my work is totally black except accidentally with some whites. So I'm not confronted with that, and I can't answer it.
Okay, I think we're going to have to conclude this. Please remember, if you care to have some more discussion, have questions, Pastor Schiebel and Victor Leland, who's working in black ministry, will be here in this room. We want to thank particularly Pastor Schiebel. It's been a great experience. Thank you so much for coming. Vicar Leland, you too, we appreciate having you here, and we'd like to say we're deeply honored to have the Black Ministry Commission. Don't give too long a speech. The dining hall is waiting.
Okay, I'd like to invite them to come also so you can hear from the black pastor.
Oh, great. We appreciate that. I attended the Black Lutheran Ministry Convocation in New Orleans a couple of years ago. And these people really know how to worship. I think the communion service lasted 2 hours and 45 minutes. And they keep worshiping. Okay, thank you very much for coming. We'll